As Texas fans, unfortunately, over the last decade, we haven't always felt like we're part of a winning team. But Kevin, how can our listeners become a part of a winning team?
Get a better offensive line. I would really develop well, too, because the whole talent thing comes down to really evaluation and then also kind of development and all those things come together. You can never get Gabe.
Oh, what if someone's already talented and they're already living up to their full potential?
That'd be great. And maybe they give you options?
They'd give you some options. And that is our amazing sponsor, Gabe Winslow. He and his amazing team at 832-557-1095 or mortgagesbygabe.com. Now is a great time because we've had so much equity appreciation. Many of our listeners in Austin and Dallas and even in Houston, not forgetting about you, Houston, you've had some equity appreciation in your home. And so even if you can't get necessarily a incredible better rate, although many of you can because of the nature of rates right now being at all-time lows, even if you get the same rate, you might have the opportunity to tap into equity in your home at $150K, $200K, or even less and put that money to work. You could whether invest it, pay for college, use it to run your small business, use it to buy more houses. The Texas real estate wave probably is not ending anytime soon. So if you're interested in learning about creative options to tap into the equity in your home, call Gabe at 832-557-1095. And of course, if you're buying a new home or you're buying some rental properties or investment properties, he can help you out as well. He's really shrewd at cutting the best deal for you, not the best deal for him. And that's what you're going to get if you go call your traditional bank. There's a reason that they're in a big, nice building and a big lobby with an atrium and a little water amusement fountain in the middle of it.
How's the bathroom?
That was paid. Go ahead.
How's the bathroom?
Exactly. Immaculate. Marble. Granite. Imported Italian marble. There's a reason. And someone paid for that. And that person was you, the customer, because they're marking everything up. Go to a broker, go to someone who can go to a different 100 different lenders, get you the absolute best deal for you and deliver. That's Gabe, 832-557-1095. We know Gabe will deliver for our listeners. Kevin, Texas didn't quite deliver on Saturday, did they?
No, it sucks. I mean, as a Texas fan, which you and I are, and most of our listeners, I mean, to some degree are, to where, you know, you really want to get all the bounces your way and win games like this where probably you shouldn't have, or you certainly should have if you look at certain parts of the game. But it's 2 weeks in a row where I could say, hey, if you cut it off at this point and say Texas loses, you'd say this is awful and there's no excuse and all that. And I get that to some degree, but I also think this is a shoot your wad type team that – they are trying to scheme around talent, and they're at a spot where it's just trying to hold on, and they couldn't hold on the last 2 weeks because went back and rewatched it this morning. Very cool and crisp in Austin, which is nice. It was good for a bike ride after a game like that this morning and was going through stuff and really thought, well, I'm not really sure, you know, real watch, real time, this is a game that, if, like I said, you cut it off at one point, you'd say there's no way they can lose this. But then they don't look like the better team for a half or more. And we can get on coaching for sure. But we've done that for a long time. And these guys are pretty good coaches that we know of at other spots. And it just feels like that this team is limited. We've talked about limitations a lot, probably more than we thought. And it's also very frustrating because they could have won these last two and you're 6-1 at that point instead of 4-3 in a bye week.
Yeah, I think the frustrating thing is not just losing the lead, but how it gets frittered away.
Yep.
Right. And we're going to delve into that both on offense and defense. But, you know, I hate to be the simpleton guy that boils down the game to one play because one play almost never determines a game. Right.
It kind of, momentum-wise, it did here, though.
Boy, it did. That Casey Thompson pick six, Texas is driving. They're on the Oklahoma State 18-yard line. They're up 17-3. It's 3rd and 10. If you convert there, you're probably scoring a touchdown. You're going to go up 24-3. If you don't convert there, Dicker's going to come on, and 90% chance he nails the field goal. And you're up 20-3 with about 5 minutes left on the clock before the half. And suddenly Oklahoma State's starting to look at having to put the ball a little bit more on Spencer Sanders, who was pretty shaky himself. And that's not what happened. You had a 10-point swing at minimum with one bad throw. And I actually flew in for this game and went and watched it, had great seats, sat in my dad's seats. He has the old faculty seats built up, and you know, over time he's gotten great seats. And I watched it happen, and I felt myself mouthing no as I saw Casey just look out and throw it sort of on automatic, like without really looking at what was happening out there. And you knew the OSU guy wasn't going to get caught. And suddenly it's a one-score game. It's 17-10. And the entire stadium just sort of deflated.
Yeah, it did. It was kind of a robber concept. And when you run double slants, I don't think that was. I didn't look at that.
It was a bad route, too. It was weird.
Yeah, it was. But you have to be aware of that. And, yeah, I mean, it felt like that on TV in terms of you being there. I mean, it's kind of one of those, you can feel that. But there's got to be some answer to that. And the reality is also is that the script of Sark has been great the last 2 weeks. But you get to adjustments, and the other team is adjusted. I mean, I felt like this was 2 weeks in a row where the other team really made – tangible adjustments. We all saw them, and Texas had nothing to go with that. Now, whether that nothing to go with that is, hey, we're more limited, like I said, than you thought, and we have a certain amount of talent. There's only so much we can do scheming around stuff, or if it's these guys who we've seen make adjustments at other spots not doing it.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's a little bit of both. I mean, we can talk about it. And I think what ultimately, you can't let the game be determined in the middle of the second quarter or near the end of the second quarter.
Agreed.
Right? I mean, obviously that was a big turning point, but ultimately the last six Longhorn drives went as follows. Are you ready for it, Kevin? Because it's going to be easy math. Three plays, negative three. Three plays, seven. Three plays, three. Three plays, negative six. Four plays for seven. And the four plays, of course, was where Texas started with second and one. This is the nut-cutting drive to end the game where Texas still has a chance to win. Starts off with second and one off of a nine-yard Bijan Robinson run, and somehow Texas ends up in third and short, basically throws away, or actually ends up in fourth and short, throwing away basically two plays after that run on second and one, which sort of should be a gimme down. And Texas ends the game with running 17 plays for 13 total yards.
Yeah, 170-1 in the fourth quarter in terms of, in terms of total yards. Oklahoma State had not scored a third quarter point all game. So they weren't great hitting into the second half. It was kind of weakness on weakness, like the Texas defense, against their offense, where we have questions about everything. And Texas was just not able to really do anything. I mean, I'm with you. I mean, we're not binary, so I think this is a huge concoction of a lot of stuff. And development and evaluation, getting back to previous staffs, and even development. These guys kind of what we know. They are what they are right now. And in the postgame show, I got into that a lot. We talked after the game, and I said, man, the talent's not very good here. And I'm right about that. I mean, it's certainly not as good as if you want to line up 24/7 composite rankings and say, well, it matches up with them. Well, it's about,
No.
It's also a lot about development. I mean, it's about development with that, too.
Talent is what talent does.
By 21, right? If you've been poorly developed and poorly nutritioned and all that, I mean, that's kind of who you are.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And the other thing I want to talk about, I want to bounce off you. I think part of the early game success is that Sark is able to, and we'll just stick to offense. We'll switch to defense in a second. He can dress up some interesting looks early, but what he's really trying to disguise the fact is that we have Bijan Robinson and Xavier Worthy.
Yeah. And that's it.
That's about it.
And that's it.
And
with a really bad offensive line.
Well, I'm just talking about getting the ball in people's hands who can do something with it.
I know. Okay? And I'm just saying that to do that, if you only have two, then it's even tougher with a really bad. If it's an average offensive line, you could maybe work around it.
Yes. Yeah, and also Casey, not exactly Dallas Casey, right? That was
he
bad. Played a tough ball game.
He did.
And so I guess my thought is the tight ends aren't receiver eligible, right? We don't use them. And then I think Jordan Whittington, who's a good player, I think we might have felt his loss even more than anticipated, because he is that one viable option other than Worthy in the passing game, who, if you hit him in the middle of the field, he can create yards after the catch. He's got some physicality. He can shake off a tackler, get extra yards. I feel like because of the lack of options, the dearth of options, losing even a good option really hurts you.
Yeah. No, I agree. I mean, third down, middle of the field, that was kind of the biggest worry with Whittington. But, if you've been listening to the podcast or me on the air, I've been saying it for a long time. I do think we overrate the talent, that to where all the answers and fixes can be just with the magical coaches that come in. And the reality is it's a combination, like you said, and we can certainly, and we have on this podcast, and I have, gotten on coaching in the last 10, 15 years, but nothing's 100% to zero. And if you watch other national college football and then watch these guys, I don't care about 17-year-old rankings. I don't, development is a huge part of it. Scheming it, it's a big part of it. This is not that talented of a football team. And you just said that. I mean, with Xavier and Bijan being the main guys, to go with some serious deficiencies within the other nine.
Yeah. In the second half, Casey Thompson, obviously he came in, his thumb was bothering him. It didn't seem to bother him early. And he was getting some good looks and throwing decent balls. He threw a nice ball to Marcus Washington for that gain.
Yeah.
58-yard gain. The interesting thing about that play, Kevin, didn't loosen up Oklahoma State at all.
No.
They basically just said, yeah, that, nice play. We don't think you can do that again. And they were right.
Yeah.
So I do think it's interesting, though, that when Casey did take a hard hit in the second half, and of course he went out for one play, Hudson Card came in. You know that's going to be a handoff right there. Given Casey's level of play and not knowing how hurt he is potentially, do you give Card a full series there, or do you just have to stick with Casey?
I give him a full series, and also I don't hand off, because – you want to talk about breaking tendency, the easiest thing ever in the world. I mean, that is a 3-0 fastball, but there's a better chance that you're going to have a handoff with the new quarterback coming in. Man, I go play action and let him use his arm, which Casey at times couldn't this game against their defense and their bump and run.
Boy, I agree with you. I understand that we're getting into the whole quarterback nonsense controversy.
No, we're not. We're talking about one play is actually what we're doing.
Well, yeah, and also a series potentially, right?
A series.
Casey's not playing great at that point, and you're beyond just waterlogged on offense, right? We read you those last possessions.
I use that as an excuse to actually test that theory.
That's exactly right. You kind of want to use that as an opportunity to be like, Card, have you recovered a little from Arkansas? Are you ready for this? And I think we might have squandered that opportunity. That said, Card might have thrown a pick six right there. Who
could have? No, you would have no dog in the fight. So at that point, we're just trying to win this game, and it's so frustrating they couldn't. But yeah, I mean, I talked with a Texas fan this morning about that, and old school Texas fan. He said, and he's not pro either one. He said, would you have, maybe just tested that out there? And I'm like, yes, I would have. And also, he said the same thing you did. The most obvious thing in sports is when a new quarterback comes in, it's a handoff right away. I mean, I would not be shooting the gaps, barreling, and playing more run defense with run blitzes ever than if a guy came in, which is why we hired Sark, is to play against that.
I think that's right. And so I'm curious, do you want to talk a little defense? Because the Texas defense played pretty acceptably for three quarters, right?
Yep. No, Texas defense is not the problem here. Everything was a problem in
Fayetteville. They ended up becoming the problem, right?
They did, but if you have a 17-3 lead, then they would become the problem like they did against Tech, to where it's in a W at the end of the day.
It felt like a suicide pact. Right?
Yeah, it did. Go ahead, because I think I know where you're going, but I want to hear
it. Well, no, I'm not going to develop that theme anymore.
No, develop it. Explain it.
No, it's okay. But
explain it. I'm lost, Paul.
Well, oh, yeah, I'm sure you are. Yeah, I mean, basically, it just feels like the offense and defense in the fourth quarter the last 2 weeks just sort of mutually look at each other and be like, I'll jump if you jump. It's like, hey, man, I need one of you to assert yourselves and not feed into the other, right?
Yes.
I need one of you to, like...
One of you should talk down the other.
Yes.
Mushrooms or not.
One of you to point out all the good things in life and play some classical music and go get a workout in, right? Let's not dwell in the spiral down. And I feel like the offense and defense are engaged in a negative dialogue in the fourth quarter where they're like, oh, you thought that was shitty. Hold my beer.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. And then you went try and one up the other one. They're obviously not trying to do that. Paul and I understand that, but it did kind of feel that way. And, you know, complimentary football is something that it was thrown out about Oklahoma State. And I was looking at their special teams were ranked really high analytically, actually number two in the country by one. But they were 3 of 6 from field goals. And they actually were kind of just an average football team that played really good third down defense like they did last year when they led the country, and really good defense overall. And they did complement on defense in terms of the back end, front end, linebackers, all that. But they're not that good of a football team. And
no,
they're not.
They didn't beat themselves. And I think early Gundy, when Spencer Sanders threw his own pick, he was like, all right, we're going to wait. We're going to bide our time, and we're going to see if Texas can self-destruct.
Yeah, and they did. No, they played it perfectly, and they are – I shouldn't say they're not a good football team. They are, but they're not a great football team. They're not a top-10 team, but they've kind of worked their way into that, and a lot of it is just being smart, disciplined, and kind of playing 60 minutes. Let's see if they can finish this out.
I think you're right. I think one thing that was interesting in defense, I don't know if you noticed, but – we came out early in the game knowing that Oklahoma State wanted to run the ball, and we came out in a true 3-4.
Yeah.
There was not a base nickel, which has been our want, right, throughout the year. And from that base nickel, we always play sort of catch and release on the defensive line and put a lot of onus on the linebackers and safeties and run support. The Texas front came out in an old-school 3-4, 5 men on the line of scrimmage, right, Ovi and Ray Thornton standing up outside like the old Wrecking Crew, with 3 down linemen on the interior, all lined up in gaps.
Yeah.
And that was – and we started Alfred Collins and Moro Jomo. So one thing about the coaching I will point to, and I will give them a slight on, it should not take you 7 games into the season to realize that Alfred Collins is one of your best players on defense.
No, it shouldn't. And we can get into 3-4 and all that. But I think Ovi was field, Ray was boundary, right? I mean, we kind of saw that. You're right. I mean – you know, we heard questions about practice and intensity and all that. But, yeah, Alfred should have been in there. Alfred played like a man, especially in the first half.
He got after it. Jomo played well, not as glaringly well as Alfred Collins. Alfred Collins made a bunch of plays.
Yeah.
And he is a very active, very athletic guy. They lined him up outside, not outside like, like a stand-up pass rusher outside the tackle, but as like a 5 technique with an edge fronting him. And that pretty much guarantees he's going to get single blocked, and he can shoot a gap, which plays to his strengths. He's very quick. And he repeatedly did that. Ojomo did a good job. And the Texas defensive line was making plays on the other side of the line of scrimmage, which has not happened all year. Well, Oklahoma State starts messing around with some of their wide receiver splits. They start messing around with spacing, and they kind of got us out of that look. And I don't know why we weren't able to get back into it and execute, especially in the fourth quarter, because when OSU's offense went absolutely off, these are their last 3 possessions, Kevin. And by the way, before the fourth quarter, Oklahoma State had not scored an offensive touchdown.
Yeah.
So in the fourth quarter, 10 plays, 80 yards, touchdown. 9 plays, 51 yards, field goal. 3 plays, 42 yards, touchdown. They had 173 yards and 16 points on their last 3 possessions. They, of course, went for 2, didn't get it. Good tackle by Jalen Ford. 145 of those were rushing yards. Jalen Warren ran for 110 yards and a quarter, Kevin.
Yeah, I mean, obviously this team, we can get into why, but obviously this team is awful in the fourth quarter, and they're worn down. That can get into talent, the depth of talent. That can get into adjustments, as we've talked about. I mean, I think there's probably some blame to go around everywhere.
One more thing.
Strength and conditioning and endurance.
Bingo.
Yeah. No, I mean, all that goes into it. So I would say probably the last one that you just said bingo on is probably the most, but that's been a problem, and it's only gotten better, only gotten worse, and been kind of just, I don't know, it just adds to all the issues they already have that you have to have this lead getting into the fourth quarter.
Exactly right. And there's a physicality aspect to this, right? And you can't throw that on the coaches, right? I mean, I understand the coaches can breed physicality in your team. It's up to the players at some level to decide that they're going to be physical. There was a play in the second half where, and I can point to you to a few, but this one just struck out to me in the rewatch. OU ran a little true option. Spencer Sanders is running down the line. He pitches it out to Jalen Warren. And he turns up the field like a blocker. Spencer Sanders weighs, 205, 210. He lowers a shoulder on Ovi Agofu out in space and drops him.
Not good.
Yeah. Well, it's funny you said that. I wrote this up on Inside Texas, and I just put some different clips of things that I saw that were problematic. And I put that play, and then after the play, I just wrote, and that's exactly what you said when I just described it to you, which is, hey, anything can happen on a football field. One play doesn't determine everything. But you see that and you go, their quarterback just dropped a shoulder on our outside edge guy who weighs 235, 240 and dropped him.
Yeah.
It's like, what's up?
Kind of tells you where we're at. And so, I mean, if you do watch this team, then watch other teams, especially at that point of the line. So defensive line, which we overrated, everyone did, and understandably so. You look at Devondre Sweat in Keandre Coburn, you think these guys will get into shape. You got Alfred Collins. There were names there, and the defensive line's been okay. One thing we kind of were worried about were the linebackers, which is why they went so heavy in the portal. And you get in situations like that where they're very one-dimensional. And we said that early on after, I think, Louisiana or Rice around there, to where you're going to have to, once again, scheme around your talent. And if you get into situations where Ovi Agofu and it's not 3rd and 11, or Ray Thornton and it's 3rd and 11 and he's in there, you got the wrong guy.
Yeah. Also, probably we need to address one thing. I don't know if you heard about this or you got it from Colin, but near the very end in the goal line when Texas needed the ball back,
they allowed them
to
score.
We let Oklahoma State score.
Yes. I got a call in.
32-24.
Yes. So I got a call in and I got tweets on that. And I go, yes.
They just quit.
They let them score. And there was one guy said that was the microcosm of the lack of grit, heart, balls, And I mean, I want to taint with that too, And I'm like, all right, well, I understand what he's saying. And it's very easy with everything we talked about with the fourth quarter struggles for us to say there are a lot of easy outs with fans in general when they watch sports, right? And one of them is they gave
up. Players just don't want it.
They gave up. They quit. They got no heart. They suck.
The coaches absolutely suck. We have the worst coaches in America.
And this is coming from two guys that have a podcast called Everyone Gets a Trophy. So I'll also get it's 2021 and with high fructose corn syrup and their moms, pussifying them that I'm like, well, can I agree with those 2 points separately outside of this point?
Right.
Because it's not give up. It's not quit. It actually comes down to, and Paul and I know this, man, there have been basketball games, not baseball games, to get back to your point, but F you. Basketball and football games.
Well, let's focus on real sports.
And soccer matches, where I was so worn out at the end of it that you look back once you actually get your breath back and actually feel like yourself as a person, you go, I can't believe that I let that kind of beat me.
Yeah, no, that's – you know what? I don't mean to switch gears here for a moment, but as much as you know about baseball, as much as you talk baseball, God help us, and as much as you make me talk baseball and pay attention to baseball just so I can know what you're talking about, I don't know your Major League Baseball team.
Cubs.
It is the Cubs.
Lifelong, too. So I'm 43, and, you know, WGN started playing Cubs games when my dad was in middle school. And on the south side of Chicago, near the Pollocks there, Paul. And so he's actually a Sox and a Cubs fan because he loved baseball so much. So he was already a Southsider who liked the Cubs, and I spent every summer there. And it was the Harry Carey, Arnie Harris is the director who would show a bunch of hot chicks, and he turned it into a party. So
I remember it.
Yeah, so 80s on, my dad's from Chicago. He was cool with the Cubs. I was a huge Cubs fan, so 2016 was very big to me. I never thought I'd see it, and I did.
Well, two comments. One, it's a compliment to how even-handed you are, actually, in analyzing baseball, and I never really knew your team.
Well, and they don't compete very often.
Well, that's true. So I guess it does give you some dispassion and analysis because you're not really in the pennant race.
No, I'm the guy. I'm the guy who's doing College Game Day, and I graduated from SFA.
Yes, exactly right. And then the second, I think I've mentioned this before, but I remember the WGN games and the Cubs games, and I would watch them if I was incredibly bored or I needed sleep.
It was a party, though, and we were kids.
It was a party. I've been to a Cubs game. It was a blast. And I remember Harry Carey, who I dearly loved, and, you know, he would somehow be a source of outrage today, but I remember one play. They're playing, and there's a long fly ball, and the outfielder misplays it because the sun is hitting right in his eyes, right? And he loses the ball in the sun. It basically goes off his head in comical fashion. And the guy, you know, Carey's like, that ball goes off Batista. He lost it in the sun. He's from the Dominican Republic. How could he ever lose anything in the sun? The sun's out all the time there.
No, Harry, you hit the nail on the head. Harry would have been canceled for a lot. Can you imagine Harry Carey now?
Oh, God. Like, they just can't understand that he's a fun, harmless old man.
Yeah.
Let him have it.
Right. So
he bears no ill will.
They used to come back from break, and Arnie Harris is why I mentioned him. The director would tried to turn this into essentially what we had in the 90s with the MTV during the summer, the beach house, you know?
Yes.
Where it's just a bunch of hot chicks, and we're in between two-a-days, and you got to work one out. So he would come back from break and show these hot chicks, and we're kids, and the Cubs could be 25 games out and down 9-1. You're still watching.
The girls are going to have their bikinis on in the bleachers.
Exactly. And you just, I mean, you would look at the bleachers, and you just think, oh, my God, it's Tuesday.
Yeah. All right. We did this divergence. This is how irritated I am by Texas football. I let you talk Major League Baseball for 8 minutes.
You did. Sorry about your Giants. Astros Red Sox with the Astros starting pitching. McCullers should make the roster. And now we got Valdez last night. This is going to be fun. And the Braves are up 1-0.
Hey, I will tell everybody, the listeners, as detestable as baseball is, for the obvious reasons I don't have to explain to anyone.
What is your son's favorite sport?
Oh, just be quiet. If you do get a chance to watch the 30 for 30 on the 86 Mets, it is worth your time. Those guys were lovable outlaws, or at least briefly lovable, and then they became just outlaws. But they did all the cocaine in the 1980s. It was very impressive.
It was nuts. I mean, Larry Kudlow was wondering where his cut was in the 80s in New York.
Dude, like, the mid-80s Lakers were like, whoa, yeah. These guys out-partied us.
How about the trip back from Houston when they clinched that in Game 6 and didn't have to face Mike Scott?
Plane.
And they destroyed the plane. And I forgot who it was, said, man, there was a lot of cocaine and a lot of wives that were puking. But, I mean, that must have been a kiddos, don't do it. Trust me, we're not trying to glorify something, but it is awe-inspiring, or at least just alarming.
Well, the finale of that story was Davey Johnson, players manager, hashtag doormat, stood up in front of the team and said, "Hey guys, we trashed this plane. We're gonna have to pay for it." And the players were like, "We ain't paying for nothing." So Davey Johnson said, "Okay, we're gonna say that the wives trashed the plane." And the players all cheered. Yeah, Davey.
And then he ripped up the bill.
Rips up the bill, exactly right.
In front of them and gets them all ready to go. Yeah, no, that is pretty good. Baseball's amazing. Austin Wood is in town. We're doing this on Sunday. I've got some stuff on Tuesday and Wednesday. We usually record it on Monday, but because I'm off Tuesday and Wednesday, I've got a bunch of stuff here tomorrow. So we're doing this Sunday. Probably a good time to do it, too, because there's a bye week. And, I mean, this team, Paul, could very easily be 6-1. Very easily be 6-1. And you're looking at the momentum. It's feeling very 1998, but even earlier than when that thing really turned. You've got a Heisman candidate. You're really trying to get the Arch Manning. So think about all the recruits that were in town yesterday. That's probably the biggest frustrating thing for me, because honestly, I don't give a shit what the final record is this year.
I think you do have to give Sark that first year and just say, hey, there's stuff he's trying to figure out. Look, I think we also can talk about this. It's the bye week. This roster's getting overturned in the offseason. And I don't just mean recruiting classes and graduation. I mean the portal.
I hope.
Oh, I think that's happening.
All right, what do you got?
Well, no, I'm just saying. I think that's – I think Sark sees that he's going to have to make some moves in the portal. The difference is, you know, a lot of the guys in the portal aren't necessarily all Americans, right? And so Texas brought in quite a few guys in the portal in the offseason. They're not world beaters, right? And so I think the key is –
they're in the portal for a reason.
Well, you want to get in the portal game early. And you want to start sending out your feelers before the guys declare. Or you want to get some guys who feel like they're being misused who are actually really good players, or there's a coaching change, and you get your feelers out to them behind the scenes and encourage them to go in the portal because they've got a place at Texas. Does that make sense to you?
It does. This is where I talk about resources in R&D departments like McVay, Peyton and Shanahan have, to where they're stealing plays. They're also stealing talent. And so I would literally have, I mean, I would add to the personnel in that one room, or hopefully building now, that's doing, just looking at every single recruit from 14 on and trying to track that process, that get early relationships, all that. I would be doing the same thing with 80 teams in college football. Guys that you can tell with twitch, certain things, and you and I have done that with Texas players because you see him a lot, and you go, man, that guy was misused, and he transfers, and he goes and kills it somewhere or does really well. I would do that because you got to rebuild this roster. You're right. I mean, the Garden part of it is more recruiting from high school. The instant caffeine fix is actually getting a guy who's been misused at some other spot.
Yeah, we've got to mix up some long-term vegetables and some Red Bull.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Well, and to your point, Kevin, there are NFL teams, the good NFL teams, unsurprisingly, the programs that have sort of been lasting and good is the Ravens, Patriots. They have entire portions of their scouting department that aren't focused on college kids or area recruiting or any of that.
NFL
They're focused
guys.
On other NFL teams.
Right. And
it's
practice
not to
squads.
Prepare for the next opponent. It's to find people on the bottom of other NFL team rosters that they like more than that other team that would fit their system.
No doubt. No doubt. So, and it's also practice squads. It's a lot of stuff to where, yeah, I mean, it'd be like if you started a company, Paul, and you're trying to recruit people and hire people. Well, yeah, some of that would be on people getting out of college. Some of that would be on people that are actually already in that industry and proven and maybe looking to make a change.
No doubt. Hey, I know someone who's proven, and if you're looking to make a change in your realtor, or you need a realtor either to sell your home or to purchase a home in the Centex area, and I'm defining that broadly as North San Antonio up to Temple, Texas, Kevin. including the beautiful communities of Killeen, Copper's Cove, Jarrell,
Georgetown,
etc.
Georgetown,
well,
right?
Yeah, Georgetown. Well, of course.
Well,
George,
better
I mean,
be if you're
saying.
If you're going that far.
Let's get you in a Del Webb community immediately. I want you to reach out to Laura Baker. She's at 512-784-0505. Hey, this is my opinion. This is not coming certainly from Laura, who has great respect for all of her peers. But the hard truth, Kevin, is Pareto's principle applies to real estate. The top 10% of agents are responsible for 80% of the transactions. Mm. If you don't believe your realtor is among the top 10%, because this is a person who does 3 or 4 transactions a year at most, but you're using them because it's your wife's friend from college or it's Peg down the street and it's you don't want to have an uncomfortable conversation, that's not a great approach to one of the largest financial decisions you'll ever make in your life, which is either selling or buying your home. You need to adopt a very clear-eyed view that you want to hire someone elite to act as your advisor in that process. Laura Baker is that person. 512-784-0505. Kevin, I want to bounce something off of you, which kind of obeys the first rule of improv, which is you don't say no to people, you say yes and.
Yeah, keep it open-ended.
Keep it open-ended. And in that vein, I want to bounce off of you Oklahoma State's offensive line, because you mentioned the importance.
No,
you won't allow it. Yes, and. But you mentioned the importance of development, right? Talent is what talent does. It's not what you were ranked when you were 18 years old, right?
Right.
If you sit and basically aren't coached well, aren't developed very well, or you personally don't exactly have the eye of the tiger and take advantage of your opportunities, you're not going to get better. In fact, you're probably going to get a little worse than what you were. And you're not going to progress.
Right.
And I want to bounce Oklahoma State's offensive line off of you, because they are by no means world beaters. By the way, Oklahoma State's offense ain't real good.
No.
And I want to bounce these 5 starters off of you, because if this was the profile of the 5 starters at the University of Texas, the Texas fans would have a shit fit. Okay. But it does talk about the importance of development. It talks about the importance of identification. It talks about the importance of scheming them up a little bit, right? And also these players need to be hungry themselves. Well, let me bounce these guys off of you. At left tackle, they start Cole Birmingham, redshirt sophomore, right? So this isn't the 5th or 6th year senior, okay? His best offers, I'm not going to get into the stars. He's a 3-star. But his best offers were Arizona State, and Missouri, coming out of high school.
Okay.
Left guard, stud, Josh Sills. Graduate, senior, very experienced player, big physical road grader. He was a good player at West Virginia. He transferred to Oklahoma State. He's been very good for them as a run blocker. And he played high school ball in Ohio. He was a low-ranked 3-star recruit. Didn't have very good offers. But he's a good player. Talent is as talent does. That's a good player. We'd be very, very happy to have him playing on our team, right?
Yeah.
At center, Danny Golveski. Transfer from the MAC. He started at Miami of Ohio.
He sounds like a bad guy, like in a Grease type movie.
Danny Golveski. Oh, he's got a switchblade. At right guard.
He races cars.
That's right. Right guard, Hunter Woodward, redshirt junior, 3-star coming out of high school. His best offers were Ball State, Illinois, Wyoming, and Arkansas. And then finally,
in Arkansas, right back, in the worst time they've ever been in.
Yeah, exactly.
This is not Kenny Hatfield recruiting kid in 88.
This was not Jason Peters, right?
No.
And then at right tackle, Jake Springfield, redshirt sophomore, former walk-on.
Yeah.
Unranked. He was a walk-on. And he was second team all-district in high school. Okay, those are his accolades. That was their starting right tackle. Now, by no means am I suggesting these guys are good, but the Oklahoma State Cowboys are 6-0 with that offensive line. Do we think not only player identification and scheme, but talent development and strength and conditioning plays some kind of role in these guys being able to stay on a college football field?
Of course. And Josh Sills, who's the left guard, right? who transferred from West Virginia. Okay, so yeah. Sills was already an all-conference guy when he transferred there. So the other ones, I think, are all them. Yeah, I mean, it's about scheming these guys, building on their strengths, not their weaknesses, improving their weaknesses, but understanding kind of the limitations they have, which is why I get back to the deficiencies or limitations Texas has, where you have to be able to build around that, and Gundy has done a great job with that. I mean, you remember that we saw diamond formation a couple times yesterday, but I mean, think about all the variations of Gundy and his teams. Now they are they're not explosive at all. They're protecting their quarterback. Their biggest limitation, which is the toughest limitation with offensive line, but they know they have a good enough offensive line, a good enough running back, Utah State kid. I said yesterday on the post game that that's taking a 5.5 home at 210 on 6th Street. I know you've done that, Paul.
She weighed 210? No, I've never done that.
You've never taken away you've never gone home with a 5.5 because
– Oh, you mean 210 a.m. I thought you meant 210
pounds. Yeah, 210 a.m., 10 minutes after
like
final
call. I don't
like
to take home a girl who could potentially manhandle me. I don't like her being the same size as me.
I don't mean 210. I meant at 210. You get my point. He's not a bad back, and he actually – if there were a couple games, or really this one and a couple others, where you looked at his numbers and you go, you know what, that was pretty damn impressive. But at the end of the day, Jalen Warren is just kind of a good back who's running behind a good line, but they're all – synchronized, they're all kind of going on the same page, and some of their parts, they're like your San Francisco Giants, is better than the individual talent, which Texas is not.
Well, and so that's the thing to think about, and that's kind of the mystery wrapped in the puzzle and the enigma, which is that kind of ordinary offensive line, minus Josh Sills, who is a player, with a above average back and a very limited quarterback, and frankly, Oklahoma State always has a dude at wide receiver. They don't really have that dude this year. That's their offense.
I would say Tay Martin, but he didn't have the dude to get him the ball, which is the main thing being a receiver.
That's fine. There you go. But it probably the same point, right? Made a different way.
It is.
Which is he wasn't allowed to impact the game, just like Xavier Worthy was not allowed to impact the game.
He's not an impact, but he's a dude. He's not an impact because the awful quarterback play.
Good point. So the point is they took that very fallible group that we just described and didn't exactly set the world on fire for three quarters. And in the fourth quarter, through some adjustments and pounding on the rock, they rush for 145 yards in a quarter and sort of dominate Texas. So we've got to tease that out and figure it out. And I wish we had the easy answer. But I suspect that we've been hinting at a lot of different stuff or touching on parts of it that in total might give us some insight. But ultimately, we don't know.
No, we don't. No, we don't. And you and I, that's where I love doing this. I love doing it with Trey, too. Said it last night during postgame that we don't know what the real answer is. I don't know if Sark's a guy, but – I know that you have to give him more than 7 games, and I know that we've rinsed and repeated too many times with it's just all talent, which is kind of why I'm probably hitting that more, although I've hit it a lot. If you listen to the podcast Paul, what did I really believe in this talent in March?
No.
Okay. Was I pretty vocal about it?
Yep.
Okay. I just don't. And so I also know that these guys should be able to come in and turn around technique. But, Paul, you know this better than I do, that turning around technique can be a year process, 2-year process, 3-month process. When I heard Christian Jones is the next thing at left tackle and is really blowing up there, I thought, well, hopefully he's one of those guys that Flood came in and said, there are obvious fixes, quick fixes, where we can make this thing really go. I think the reality we just have to kind of wrap our head around is this is going to be game to game, and if Texas can get to a point where Sark can get some recruiting momentum going like Mac did in 98, then you can turn this around whether he's the perfect answer or not. I can tell you right now, he's not the perfect answer, but we've been searching a lot. And Tom Herman was actually a pretty good hire considering when they made him. LSU has just come to, by the way, we were right about this, even after the NC game, I remember you saying, hey, just because he won it all doesn't mean he's a great coach now. Orgeron's going to be done. They were trying to hire Tom Herman at the same time we were with legitimate offers. So don't I wouldn't flush that out right now, especially after seven games.
Well, Kurt Bowles put out a tweet suggesting that LSU go back to the Herman well.
You're kidding.
No. Ladies and gentlemen, our mainstream press.
Yeah. How would that go over with, and you and I are the type of guys, we don't care how it goes over if it's the right answer, but that would be such a, I mean, no, he's an offensive analyst who's been quiet this year and probably doing the right thing. Tom Herman would have to be an offensive coordinator. He'd have to kind of restart the same process he had to get that type of job.
If he won Justin Fields, the NFL MVP, because Nagy got fired, they made him the OC, then you got to have an interesting Tom Herman conversation.
Yeah.
But that ain't happening.
No, it's not. It's not. It's
so funny. So, yeah, I mean, to your point about talent, and I want to be like clear about this. Talent, to your point that you've made, is talent's not just the stars that you got assigned.
No.
It's also what you grow into.
Yeah.
And what you become. And there's a lot of inputs into that. It's your position coaching. It's your strength and conditioning. It's the player themselves, their mentality. It's also the larger program culture. Do you have a larger program culture of dipshits, lazy guys, or is it kind of chippy and edgy in there? You know, Mac Brown, we talked about the softness and all that kind of stuff. And sometimes his best teams, they were very chippy. And it might have been disguised in good PR and all that. You talk to Texas players from the 2000s who were on those good teams. There was lots of stuff handled in the locker room that Texas fans don't know about.
Oh, God. Locker room. Cleve Bryant.
Well, no. I'm talking about put out in practice.
Yep.
And a senior grabs you, slams you into a locker, and says, if you do that again, we're going to beat your ass.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean,
that happened a lot more often than people know.
Rod's talked about it after the 2000 loss. Casey Hampton, like, they were scared of him in the locker room. Scared of him.
For good reason.
Yeah, for good reason, because he was going up to every guy and telling them what they need to do. And it was even set when they were getting blown out 63-14 to where, but certainly in the mid-2000s, that culture was set, and there's nothing better than when a team runs on its own. And that's when Mac really, you know, kind of really took off.
Yeah, Texas's best teams were player-led, and I suspect other than the Nick Saban model, which is just a different robotic program process model, which Texas probably can't duplicate even if we tried, our best teams are going to still be player run. And so you've got to get good enough players with the right personality, with the right culture to be those leaders who are going to create that sort of system that would work for Texas.
So what do you do? I mean, do you open up? You got 2 weeks now. Do you open it up? Because with the deficit in talent, I mean, one of the things we can say is that, do you just open all this up? Because Jalen Ford, hell, Devin Richardson made one play that I saw on film, and I just thought, or watching the game live, and just thought, well, why is he not in there? I mean, no offense to Brockermeyer, Overshown gets hurt, but it's not like the linebacker play has been stellar. And so that's where I think as Texas fans, we do question coaching, because we've been in so many relationships frequently that you start to question, okay, well, are they doing the right thing? And because the talent is not good at linebacker, defensive back, offensive line, which is probably why we talk about Carrick, Hayden Connor, the linebackers. Should Darian Dunn be playing cornerback? When you see a play or two where they actually look okay.
Yeah, well, what it does is it erodes your confidence broadly.
Yeah.
Because if DKR started a guy, you were like, well, that appears to be the best player.
Yeah.
You didn't really like doubt it. Like, well, I think, in fact, Danny Akers would, you know, I mean, whatever. I mean,
and if you did, you had enough time where he pulls Super Bill Bradley, the five-star quarterback, for this fifth string, you know, James Street, who's more of a pitcher, and you win championships. And you go, okay, we got it.
And you realize that the Bradley thing was just a miscast.
Yes,
right?
Exactly.
And not necessarily, I mean, he's every bit as good an athlete as the coaches thought. He ends up playing in the NFL for 10 years.
Yeah,
right?
At safety, which is where they moved him, and he was all Big 12, maybe an All-American at safety.
Exactly. But it's not a complete misdiagnosis that this guy won't bust a grape on a football field, right?
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, all coaches are fallible. We're all fallible. But I guess the point is, over time, we've really lost our confidence in the coaching. And so when someone says, trust the coaches, our instinct is to roll our eyes and laugh.
Yeah, I know. And I'm not even saying when I get on the talent, trust the coaches, because I'm getting on the coaches too. I'm just telling you that we're in a shit show and have been for going on 12, 13, 14 years. And for a majority of our lifetime, I mean, Austin Wood and I, actually it was Randy Boone and I, were going back and forth. And I said, honestly, we have not had a really good football coach since I've been alive. Now, yeah. I'll say that on some of the podcasts, and I'll get a lot of shit. You just hate Mac. Mac has been the best one, and really, at the end of the day, if you're looking at some, and what he did was fantastic. But he was not a really good football coach.
Well, so that's a buck stops here analysis, which is the good and the bad stops at the head coach. And ultimately, you look at his record.
He was a great football coach.
Yes. And so was that achieved, as Steve Spurrier used to mockingly call him, Captain Football, or what, Mr. All-American or something like that? I don't think it was X's and O's. And I think even the biggest Mac defenders would agree to that. Obviously, he brought other skills and attributes to a winning program.
A winning program.
Texas football in the 2000s was pretty damn good.
And he built a great program. So that's why I'm trying to separate that. There's no reason why I would come back and say, well, he's also, you know, a great program builder. But we were just kind of going back and forth about great football coaches, or really good football coaches. And I thought, we really haven't had one, which kind of brought me back to how I'm 43, kind of what's been going on with the hiring, which gets back to your point of, we don't trust the coaches. And that's also why I brought up Mac, because Mac, at the end of the day, was exactly what we needed. And I would take another Mac right now with this situation, even though we would sit here and bitch about, oh, my God, this guy. But in terms of really good coaches and developing, the development really wasn't what it should have been under Mac. And guys in that era have told me that.
Yeah, many of them will tell you that. I know they've spoken candidly about that. Bottom line, Sark's got to get his time, and he's got to be able to play, and we just have to see.
Yeah, we do, because we don't know. And I do know that with these two coordinators, not Sark as a head coach. Sark as a head coach, we don't have really. I mean, if you look at it right now, this guy was, if he had not been rehabbed with Saban, so I mean it that way, dealt with what he did at USC, we look at his overall numbers as a head coach.
But you also mean it the other way.
I do. Yeah. I do. No, but I really mean it more with the reason that he got hired, the reason he got so big again, is not because he cleaned up his act on that end. It was about Saban and that kind of, you know, the coaching rehab of guys come in there and all of a sudden their name is on fire again, right? I mean, he turned back into the best offensive coordinator ever. Or the hot one, like Tom Herman was, the guy to go get. But if you look at his overall record at Washington and USC, and if it was just another guy who was on his third year or third time being a head coach, you'd really have a lot of questions. I don't know if he can figure all this out. I do know if you have this job, you've got to hold your ground to some degree, but also be nimble when it's actually time to make a move. Because Mac's biggest moves ever, at the end of the day, we're getting rid of Tim Nunez and actually getting rid of Bull Reese and trying to diversify that, and then letting the players take over when he actually had that locker room. Those three things turn Mac into a national champion, and at the end of the day, a great CEO and a great program builder and great head coach. I mean, because that's what he was.
Well, so that's such a good point, because as a head coach, and where I have a lot of sympathy towards them, and it's not an easy job at all, is you got to know where you're going to hunker down and say, no,
yes,
this is our identity.
I'm not listening
this,
to
and this.
I'm not listening to bullshit message board outside noise after seven games.
You're an insurance
agent. Should you fire
agent,
PK?
You don't know what you're seeing. You don't know what you're seeing. I trust me on these three points. This is what we're doing. But then, here's two other points where you can take a step back and go, damn, they're right. I got to make a change. And that's what you, that's where I think it's tough for a coach, because you've got to have this balance of loyalty to your staff. You got to let people develop. You got to let players develop. You got to let your coordinators sell you on the dream of what this defense can look like, right? If you can get X, Y, and Z plugged into it. But at the same time, you have to take a step back and look at the totality of the performance over several games and say, hey guys, like, I'm not trying to give you a lot of grief here, but it's seven games in, you just realized Alfred Collins is good and needs a role.
Mm-hmm.
And you had him sitting on the pine 4 weeks ago. Is that, you know, and you could say, well, sometimes players don't buy in. Alfred Collins is bought in, man. He's a good guy. He's a good player. Like, what's going on? And so you got to be a little bit more flexible in your system, even if he's not doing X, Y, and Z, and realize that sometimes you got to carve out a role and put a great talent on the field. And so there's a lot of tension there, man. Where do you hold the line? And where are you like water? Where do you bend a little and redirect and rechannel and flow? It's tough.
It's a tough line, there's no doubt. But also being nimble, not only nimble with kind of what we've talked about, but also with, you talk about Alfred Collins. If you're at Alabama, then yeah, you can kind of try and motivate that guy and incentivize that guy by not playing him because you're not getting the type of practice intensity you want. But if you're in the spot you're in now, I mean, I feel like this is another coaching staff like Kerman, like Strong, like Mac late, that doesn't understand kind of what they're dealing with. And they're almost caught up in their own bubble with talent especially. And you didn't have the luxury of not playing Alfred Collins. You don't have the luxury of not playing really anyone at any position, whether it's your ideal program and his type of focus, intensity, whatever that is, whatever's in Sark or these coaches' minds. Understand, we are treading water right now. There are no luxuries.
That's a great summation. Yeah, that's kind of how I feel. And it's got to be all hands on deck if you want to just go 8-4, right?
Yes.
I mean, that's the goal now. It's to go to a decent bowl and try to build some stuff, develop the roster, see who wants to play, flesh out, give some guys some opportunities. Don't give up on the season. None of that nonsense. But you need to go explore. You need to turn over some rocks and see what might be under it, because, you know, this is the opportunity in year one to make some of that stuff happen. And we got to establish our back channel guy. You and I are in agreement on that one. We got to get that back channel moving to all these other programs and do some scouting of other teams and start letting them know that the Texas Longhorns might have a place for that two-time all-conference guy who's not very happy playing at Washington State.
I wish you would have done that more. We talked about it in the spring, and they obviously filled the edge, and I understand that, but I felt like they went heavy there, and the reality is they needed to go heavy a lot of spots, whether that was offensive line was the other obvious one. Go get other offensive linemen. We're okay. I kept on saying, are you really? Christian Jones in Okafor?
Yeah, we need our Josh Sills.
Oh, God, I would love one of those. Hey, you'll love this guy, David McClellan, fiduciary financial advisor from Forum Financial. This guy really knows his stuff. He was a national champion swimmer, so he was developed at UT and really has developed into one of the best financial advisors out there. He's seen every part of the industry, so he's got just a great resume. It speaks for itself, but you'll kind of see that you'll understand when you talk to him. You can get that free consultation if you just mention us, that this guy really understands every angle of this market and kind of the business as well. He can help you understand your financial freedom number, what you could be doing differently to build your wealth, also maybe achieve some financial freedom a little bit faster. Get in touch with them, 312-933-8823. It's 312-933-8823. David McClellan, D. McClellan at forumfin.com. So we're just finish off here. Where are you with this team right now, program? You probably are up in the air. You have no idea. Anyone who tell you they know exactly what's going on with the Texas program or current team, they're probably full of shit, right?
More than likely. I mean, I don't think the coaches know, and they're in the locker room every day. So, you know, it's a little bit of a blind man and the elephant, right? So, ultimately, I'm going to think about it over the bye week. I'm sure the Texas coaches are going to think about it over the bye week. The Texas fans, I would encourage you not to think about it over the bye weeks. Mm-hmm. Just go out and enjoy yourself. And I do want to add one thing, Kevin. The other day I was wearing my Texas shirt, leaving after going and eating some barbecue, and I'm walking around the neighborhood, and someone made like some sort of comment like, oh, I don't know why you're wearing that shirt after Texas, what they did on Saturday. It's like, I'm going to rep Texas and be a Texas grad and a Texas guy for the rest of my life. And I don't give a shit if the football team goes 1-11.
Totally agree.
Like I don't know where that mentality comes from, because that is some, this is where I get to be old for a moment. That is some social media bandwagoning, front running bullshit. And if we go freaking 0-12, I'm still wearing my Texas shirt. So like, I don't even go. And then there's people making comments like similarly on, oh, I'm as embarrassed to wear my Texas shirt to the gym. It's like, no, that's when you need to be wearing your Texas shirt to the gym. Be defiant.
Exactly. I wore my Texas stuff all over New York City in 2010 with the 5-7 year. And and that's actually can be worse, because you get, I mean, we get shit now for wearing Texas stuff, especially if you're in San Francisco, but at least Texas has been bad for 10 years. The year after you're a dynasty or have a dynastic run like Texas did, like Clemson's going through right now, man, you get a ton of shit like in big cities like that. Man, what happened to y'all? Y'all fell off. And you get into these weird like sidebar discussions with people on the street. It's like, you don't know what you're talking about, but yeah, you're kind of right on that. You barely hit the nose on that. Wear your stuff and really rep it. Because if you really believe in this university, then it's way beyond 1 year. And Paul, you and I would not have even gone there after the 80s we grew up with.
Yeah, but I grew up on putrid football. So, like, let's be clear.
I put 87 Arkansas with a 7-5 team in a last second touchdown in my top 10, Paul.
That's exactly right. I mean, I think as Matthew McConaughey said, he doesn't have many affiliations. One of them is Texan and Longhorn.
Yeah.
And he's going to rep it win or lose. So, all right.
Well said, sir. All right, man. We'll talk to y'all next week during the bye week. Maybe probably have some different thoughts on kind of what's going on right now. But it sucks, man. They could be 6-1 and riding high. If that was the case, we would all think, and majority of Texas fans would definitely think, this team is way, way better than they actually are. Maybe Oklahoma State fans are dealing with that today. That, hey, could we be a college playoff team? You're not. Stop.
No.
No.
I'll solve that for you right now.
No, you're not. Enjoy where you're at. Texas fans, tough to enjoy where you're at 4-3, but this is all about trying to build momentum. And we'll find out if Sark and his crew, if they're the right guys. But right now we know we have a lot of the wrong guys, 1-85. And that goes back to our last two ex-wives and really our first wife, because that marriage just crumbled towards the end and has set us on this path that we're at right now. Paul, hit the nail on the head. Go out there, enjoy life, just relax, and we'll talk to y'all next week.